Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, Southern California. I'm Maureen Enner, your Northern California connection.
And good afternoon, Northern California. My name is Bob Lang, your Southern California connection.
Together, we're keeping it connected, Bob. How are you?
I'm doing great. Hey, listen, by the way, Maureen, the rumor that El Nino doesn't exist is absolutely false today. We're getting drenched down here in Southern California.
We are getting drenched up here in Northern California, and you know they said that El Nino was going to hit, but you know all these climate, what are they calling them these days? Now there's the DOJ is going to make it illegal mm-hmm. if you don't believe in climate change. So my birthday is March 2nd. I was born March 2nd, 1964, 52 years ago. Every single birthday that I can remember, and my mother said that when I was born, it was pouring rain. Every single birthday I remember was pouring rain. So I don't know what these climate people are talking about, because you can count on, and my dogs are going crazy because of the wind. You can count on rain on March 2nd. So what's the climate? You know, where's their theory?
Yeah, I heard Marco Rubio talking a little bit last night on the debate about climate change and how it's affecting South Florida and so forth. And he said that with the climate change that they could find Florida underwater. But he said it's all about science and everything like that. So it really doesn't much matter. We can't make a law to change the weather. That's just true. But I found it interesting that we've had rain here for the last couple of days. El Nino was supposed to hit back in December or January. It's only coming a couple months late, right?
Yeah, but like March is typically when we really get hit. And March of 2006, we had rain every single day of that month. And we did shows, Bob, you and I did a show about the drought last year. And I mentioned this. And again, California is doing this. The reservoirs are all full, and they're dumping water out into the oceans because they have nowhere else to put the water. And they've learned nothing from last year when we almost shriveled up and died with no water. Remember the summer? All of our yards around here are dead, everything, you know. And now we're getting this deluge of rain, and there's nowhere to put it. And in 5 or 6 years, when we have a dry spell, we're going to be down the same road again. It's weather. Weather is not predictable.
I wonder if they're going to roll back the price increases from the water companies after this wonderful storm we've had and all the saving of water we're going to have going forward. Or is it just wishful thinking?
I don't know. See, we've just moved to a new house. As you can tell, I'm echoing because I'm in this massive house with no furniture yet. And the wind is howling through the top of our house. And I literally just had to turn on our heater. I've never turned it on before. I didn't even know how to do it. I had to figure it out because it's so cold. And we are on water restriction here in this house. And we have a big, huge house. We have a big, huge yard. We have a swimming pool. And our lawn is growing. Everything's growing. We have a gardener coming. And I want to plant, and I want to plan, but my husband says not until we're taken off of water restrictions. So I'm like waiting. When is Brentwood going to be taken off of water restriction? Let's get on it.
it's got to be like until further notice, which could be the year 2100 by the time with the amount of rain that we always get, right? Could be 100 years from now.
Yeah, this is interesting. We have a gardener and a pool guy. So my pool guy lives one town over, which is not as wealthy as the town that I am in. And they only increase our town, Brentwood, of water usage and let the town next to us, who's not as wealthy, and the town next to that is not as wealthy. They didn't touch their water bills. But we're all in the same. We all get water from the same place. So isn't that interesting that they take from the wealthier neighborhood?
Aren't they following Bernie Sanders' plan? Isn't that what his plan is?
That Yeah, is that the Robin Hood of Walker?
Yeah. Take from the wealthy and give to everybody else. That's Bernie Sanders' plan, right? So
the funny thing is about the town next to us is they have higher property taxes, revenue taxes. You know, it's kind of interesting. Right. You know, it's like going. You know, I was investigating it all, but anyways, hopefully California. I know that all of the reservoirs up here, and especially up in Marin County, they're all full. They're saying that Shasta is full. They're saying that Folsom is full. You know, all the lakes are full. Everything is full. So let's just hope they have to release the water restrictions. I mean, they have to. There's no way that they could keep us on restriction when everything is full. They have to let us water our, But anyways, my plants are thriving. Everything's happy because it's raining, and our pool is overflowing. So whatever.
Well, we had an interesting event in my hometown of Simi Valley today. And I'm sure you remember that we had the passing of the widow of our favorite president, Nancy Reagan, earlier in the week, 94 years old, and she was to be buried today at the Reagan Library in Simi Valley, which you've been to a couple of times, and it's, I think, the best presidential library out there, and it's about 7 to 10 minutes away from my house.
Yeah, they said today, because I watched start to finish, because I knew you were on the road and you're working, and I made it a fact to watch it. They said today that that is the busiest presidential library in the whole entire United States, the Ronald Reagan Library.
That doesn't surprise me. You've been there, and you've seen how beautiful that is, and they change things around quite a bit. And it is full of class, of style, it's elegant, and I've been to one other presidential library. I went to the Nixon Library, which is also here in California, and it just doesn't compare at all.
But do you think that also speaks to how popular Reagan was?
Absolutely.
And he was from California.
Right, but as far as the other library, you know, he never lived in Simi Valley. He lived in Santa Barbara, lived in Los Angeles for a while, but he saw that property and said that, I love this. This is absolutely beautiful. And you've seen the views over Moore Park and through to the ocean, and it's spectacular.
Yeah.
And the other libraries I've heard are really nice. The new Bush Library is nice. The George H.W. Bush one in Houston is real nice as well, too. But there's just nothing that compares to this thing. This library is just it's a special place, Maureen. And
I've been there 4 times this year. I was counting in my head, because obviously watching the funeral today, I was like, I could tell you exactly where they were. They actually had it tented off. I guess her funeral was supposed to be tonight, and she was supposed to be laid to rest at sundown like he was. And he died in June. And we all remember that beautiful day. You know, we had the day off. I worked in the markets. The markets were closed. Everything was off that day when President Reagan was buried. And we all remember that famous scene where she breaks down over the casket of the flag-draped, coffin. And it's sunset. And I guess he always wanted to be buried at sunset in that spot, because that was what he liked. And so she was supposed to be buried, I guess, at night as well. But because of the weather today, they had to move it earlier. And so they were actually, remember where we were, Bob, during the debate, where all the media was watching the TVs? And they had that area tented off. That is where they tented off and had her service today.
Yeah.
So I think, she probably did not, they said that this funeral had been planned 30 years ago, and every detail was hers, including the flowers and the music. The only thing that the library added was the bagpipes at the end of the funeral, which they also added to President Reagan's, and it was the same bagpipe, the same bagpipe player, everything. And they said she probably did not think about rain. because the way that she wanted it was to be in the evening and a sunrise, you know, sunsetting. And they said that she was so detailed, but she forgot it might rain. I guess it's pretty unusual for you to get that kind of rain up there. That's what they were saying today.
It's pretty unusual. Yeah, we've had a lot of rain here all day today, and it's quite strange. But hopefully they did a good job. And
yeah, they said that definitely she did not plan for El Nino and the rain. It was very touching because as they took her out to lay her over his, you know, obviously they didn't have the internment. She was just left there. And the rain just started to pour that moment. They put her there on his, you know, on top of his burial site. And it just started to pour. I mean, just pour down rain. Of course, that's when the first ladies came out and the family and everybody came out to pass by the casket in this terrible rain. And Chris Wallace said that her name, the Secret Service named her Rainbow. That was her, you know, they all have a little secret name that they give. And her name was Rainbow. And that it was fitting that it would be pouring rain because there will be a rainbow and it would be for Nancy Reagan.
Yeah. And I know, you know, of course, her stepson, Michael Reagan, is a friend of ours on the show. I know you've reached out to him after she passed away.
I did, yeah.
Super, super nice guy, and I know he loves her very much and is going to miss her quite hard. Let's talk about that a little bit
because I'm not going to go off the record because it's not the time or place to do that. He has shared many stories with me personally about her and them and their life. I'm going to say this. Ronald Reagan was married to Jane Wyman. A lot of people don't realize this because Nancy was so dominant in his life. But he was married to Jane Wyman. She was a very well-known movie star. She ended up playing on Falcon Crest in the 80s. She was very popular. So Ronald Reagan and Jane Wyman adopted a daughter, Maureen, and then they adopted a son, Michael. They got a divorce. Jane Wyman, I think her career really was taking off, and Ronald Reagan really never got past that B actor. You know, he kind of just never could really get there, and she was going there. And we don't know what went on, right? I mean, it was a long time ago, but it was a Hollywood marriage that failed, which was very common then, too, as it is now.
Sure.
So he was quoted as saying he loved being married. He loved being having children. He loved being a family. And he ended up working for the, during the blacklisting, you know, the Hollywood blacklisting, the McCarthy era, he ended up representing actors and actresses who were being blacklisted. And Nancy Reagan was one of them. And they ended up going to dinner. He was going to help her. They both said they had early casting calls in the morning. They didn't, but that was what you said back then if you didn't really like the other person. She walked in, she immediately saw him. Yeah, she walked into the restaurant, she saw him, she said, I'm going to marry him. And that was the story of Ron and Nancy Reagan. And then they went on to have two children of their own, but he had two children from Jane Wyman that were adopted, that were his children. So that is how Michael Reagan, and of course Maureen Reagan, she passed away, but that is how Michael Reagan is a part of this. So Nancy died on Sunday. I immediately texted Mike and told him how sorry I was. And I didn't hear back, which was kind of unusual because he always responds to me. Well, from what I gather, he's out of the country. He's in Thailand. So he's out of the country. His two children, Ashley and Cameron, they are the only grandchildren to Nancy and Ronald Reagan because Patty and Ron aren't married, don't have any children. So they were in attendance. They were there today. I saw them at the casket. They spoke, I think, earlier in the week at one of the services they had at the library. So Mike Reagan is going to do something on the USS Reagan later this month, and he sent a couple of messages today that I saw that he was very happy with Patty and Ron and the speeches that they made. But let's not forget that Mike Regan is really the one who keeps his father's legacy alive. And he is the one who is up at the library all the time. And he's really the one that is, he keeps the Regan legacy alive. Patty and Ron kind of stay out of the limelight. And today was the first time I had seen them since their father had died 10 years ago, or what, 12 years ago.
It's so important that Mike Regan keep the memory of his dad alive, because especially with in this day and age and what we have going on with this election right now and the presidency that we have, it's important for us to always remember probably in our lifetime the greatest president possibly of all time as well too. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I was reading some stuff today about him, and he was definitely the most popular president of the 20th century. So, yeah, that was definitely, you know, of our lifetime, our parents' lifetime, and my grandparents' lifetime. So, you know, thinking back, Bob, what's your first memory of Reagan? Like, what do you first remember?
Of Nancy Reagan or Ronald Reagan?
No, of President Reagan. Like, what do you first remember?
Reagan. Well, my first remembrance, sadly, is I was sitting in my junior high school class one morning, and the principal comes on over the loudspeaker and says, children and teachers, this is my sad duty to tell you that our President Reagan has been shot, and it's not fatal. He's into the hospital, and it was just the most amazing surreal thing at the time. I'm in junior high school. And then the other memory of that is when I'd graduated high school. I was going to junior college, Maureen, Santa Monica College. I came home from class about 9:30 in the morning, and I'm watching the space shuttle, and I said, look at this. And I thought I was watching a live shot. And all of a sudden I see that Challenger exploding in space. And then Ronald Reagan came on and gave the most pointed speech about those astronauts that I've ever heard anybody. He was so torn up about that whole event, and he felt so bad. It was almost 30 years ago, Maureen, if you can imagine that.
It was 30 years ago this January, because I was pregnant with Haley, and Haley will be 30 in August. It was January of 1986.
That's right.
Yeah, I remember. So, I was working downtown, and no TVs, they had a radio, and but wasn't he just magical at being able to come on TV and speak? I mean, there were many times. I remember the bombing of the embassy in Beirut, where he came on and spoke, you know, came on TV, and that was early in his presidency. And he just had that gift of coming on TV at 6 o'clock. Everything stopped. You didn't eat your dinner. You know, you sat down and you watched the president. And that is something that we just don't have anymore. We have such divisiveness in this country. That is what has made me so sad all week. I listened to Diane Sawyer and Tom Brokaw speak at her funeral today. Two liberal media giants, right? Is that fair, Bob? Mm-hmm. Would you say that's fair?
Absolutely. Very fair.
ABC and NBC, two huge liberal networks. And they spoke about Nancy Reagan, how she, if you said something that she did not like, she would call you. And Diane Sawyer said we would get a phone call from Nancy Reagan, and that was the worst phone call you ever wanted to get, because that meant you were in trouble and you better fix it. And you know what? Who does that anymore? Because you know what? That's perfectly fine. I find nothing wrong with somebody telling somebody, you know what? And they said the way she would do it is she told you, and then she gave you her side, and then she gave you the whole political aspect of it, and she argued her case. She didn't just call you and I hate you. You listened to her. She commanded your respect. Where is that today? Where is that today?
She would defend the honor of her husband, Ronald Reagan, to the end. And would never. Yeah. She wouldn't stand for any criticism of him if it wasn't fair. She was a very fair lady, and she showed it in her defense, not just for her husband, but also for her country. But she always, always, always would come to the side of her husband if he was being criticized or something. And you know, obviously, it's holding
imagine,
the highest office in the land.
Okay, but like today, could you imagine Michelle Obama calling Hannity and saying, look, that's not going to be done. You need to fix this. And Hannity would listen? I mean, how far have we come? That's what I'm trying to say. It just wouldn't happen. Nobody would have that kind of influence on anybody. Maybe nobody tries anymore. Maybe nobody tries, I don't know.
I think it's more the fact that people don't want to be controversial anymore. They don't want to come out and do the right thing, even if it hurts, if it's painful for other people to hear. She didn't really care. She just wanted it. She knew what was the right thing to do, the right thing to say, and she just went out and said it. Period. And I think people today are afraid.
But then to have had Diane Sawyer and Tom Brokaw, liberal media giants, come and eulogize you at your funeral and really speak about how they respected and listened to her and did what she said. And even Chris Wallace, who was in New York, you know, doing part of the broadcast, him and his father and her were very good friends, Mike Wallace and Nancy Reagan, and Chris and her became good friends. And he said at one point he was on her bad side for a year, Chris Wallace. She didn't speak to him for a year because he did a segment about the Iran-Contra, and it came out on Ronald Reagan's birthday, the segment, and she wouldn't speak to him for a year. So it mattered. And those media giants, back then, when it was the three networks, when we didn't have 24-hour, all this, you know, chatter garbage in our heads, when it was NBC, ABC, and CBS, and when Reagan came on, he was on all networks, and there was nothing else on, remember? And she commanded them. I mean, she really had control.
Well,
that was the most poignant thing that I got out of today was we'll never have that again.
I think Nancy Reagan was certainly larger than life. But, you know, if you go back, Maureen, in the 20th century, some of the best first ladies we've had, you can go back. We could actually roll back to the 1930s, to Eleanor Roosevelt, starting with her. You could make a case and make an argument for all, just about all these women who were supported their husbands, were first ladies, and they make an impact, Maureen. It's not just the fact that they're just the spouse of the president of the United States. All of these women, and actually Hillary included, have made an impact, not just on the United States, but on the entire world at some point in time while they were in the White House.
Yeah, and I think it's their choice. You know, I've always loved Jacqueline Kennedy, and I've interviewed her Secret Service agent, and I've done shows about her, and I love, you know, I just have always loved Jackie Kennedy. And she kind of didn't like the job, didn't want the job. You know, she was like, ugh, she really didn't. But once she got in it, she realized the house was a mess. She redecorated, she brought history, class, elegance, all of this back to the White House. So I think that each first lady goes into it with their own thought of what they're going to do and the mark they're going to leave. And you know, that's kind of a great thing because that's what this country is about, right? You can leave your mark however you choose. And I think when I think back of Reagan, I was 17 when he was elected. I remember the Carter years very well. I was junior high, starting high school. And I just remember it as dark and gloomy, and we had no gas and gas lines, and you know, we had no energy and conserving and no heat, don't turn the heater on. I mean, it was just, I think of everything as brown, you know, with the Carter administration, like that 70s brown. And then all of a sudden, you know, it was New Year's Eve, it's 1980, and
there was color.
Then
all of a sudden there was color.
Then a couple of weeks later, the U.S. beats the Russians in hockey, And then our flag is like all over the place, which you did not see it at all during the 70s, I promise you,
yeah, yeah.
Unless it was on a Vietnam, you know, jacket or something that was. But all of a sudden the flag, and it was USA, USA, and then Reagan comes out of nowhere, and it's just like all of a sudden it's color. You're right. It was just this bright color. It was okay to say USA. It was okay to fly the flag. It was all right to be. You wanted to be proud of your country again, and that's what I remember. I remember just this. It was like a switch flipped on. And we left all of that behind. The 70s were a rough decade. I lived through the whole entire 70s. It was rough, you know? I mean, think about, we had interest rates at an all-time high. We had, you know, gas shortages.
How about Watergate?
Inflation. Watergate, but inflation. Do you remember, like, all of a sudden food prices skyrocketed. We had meat prices that went out. You know, inflation was huge in the mid-70s. And I just remember my parents struggling. It was tough. It was a tough time. And the 80s just were not like that. It was just all of a sudden, like, boom, you know. So,
well, I think it was a 12-year blast all the way till about 1980, 68, because that was the year when we had all these tragedies. You know, Martin Luther King was assassinated, and so was Bobby Kennedy in 1968. And it melted, it spilled over into the 70s.
Yeah.
And a lot of bad stuff happened. Speaking of the 70s, Maureen, I was going to say, you know, as we talked about first ladies, a little quick story here for you. Betty Ford, of course, was in the White House for 2 years, from 1974 to 76, and took over when Gerald Ford succeeded Nixon after he resigned. You know, she came on the scene with breast cancer awareness and then also alcoholism and dependency.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she has a Betty Ford Center.
Betty Ford Clinic and prescription drugs and alcoholism. Well, a quick story about my mom. My mom had was diagnosed with breast cancer back in 1970 or 1971. And at the time, it wasn't, you know, mainstream in the media. This is before Betty Ford had it, before it became prominent in the media. And people, you know, women were dying, but they didn't really understand why or how to treat the breast cancer. My mom, of course, had been in medicine. She was a nurse in the hospital for a few years prior to that. Went to the doctors for treatment and for discovery, and they didn't really think much of it. And, oh, don't worry about it. My mom made the choice back then. I think she was, you know, early 30s, Maureen, and said, you know what? I don't care. I have two young children. I don't want them to grow up without a mother. Just take care of it. And I don't care if I look hideous or not. And she made the choice ahead of her doctors, in front of her doctors, and said, you know, she's still here today. Never had any issues with cancer from that. And again, that was 36 years ago. And I got to tell you, Maureen, I really don't know what my life would be like without my mother, but she made that choice. And it was just a couple of years after that, when Betty Ford had breast cancer, all of a sudden
it
became mainstream.
But Nancy Reagan had breast cancer as well.
Yes, she did. And didn't Maureen, I think Maureen Reagan may have had that as well.
She died of melanoma. She had melanoma.
Melanoma, okay. But still cancer. You know, it's those things that those choices that you make. But you know, it's a good thing. It's the things that you do, that legacies that you have about, and the challenges that you have. Like Betty Ford, the legacy that she has is that Betty Ford Clinic to help people who are dependent upon alcohol and prescription and drugs and so forth. And then all the research in breast cancer. We've come such a long way in the last 40 years since then. It's a great thing that she did for society. And a lot of people don't even really remember that, or if it's 40 years ago, but all the advances that she made since then.
I was on vacation in Palm Springs and had to have emergency gallbladder surgery. So where did I go? I went to Eisenhower Hospital. I don't know. Have you ever been
sure.
there, Bob? Your parents live there. That's
yep.
like a hotel. It's like a 5-star hotel. It is just incredible, that hospital. And that's, you know, Dwight Eisenhower or Mrs. Eisenhower, I think. Mamie Eisenhower, I think, started that. The hospital. But right next to that is the Betty Ford Center. It's right there. When you come into
right.
the Eisenhower Hospital, the Betty Ford clinic is there. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful place. You can't miss it. It's just incredible, incredible. And, you know, it's made famous by many Hollywood stars and famous people who've gone there to rehab. And, she chose to go public with her problems. And, thank God that she did. And, I think the role of first lady. Let me say something that I observed today at the funeral. So we all know that President Obama decided not to go, and that's fine. I actually sent Mike Reagan a message, and I said, now it will be a dignified event. You're better off without than him there. Yeah, that's what I said. I said that's exactly what I said. And Michelle Obama now. Somebody was arguing with me on Facebook and said, name me a sitting president who ever went to a first lady's funeral. And I said, well, Bill and Hillary Clinton attended Jackie Kennedy's funeral in 1994. I watched it. I remember exactly.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Sitting presidents do go. It's just they didn't want to come to this one, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in comes the first lady. So leading them is Caroline Kennedy, who is the ambassador to Ireland, isn't she? Didn't Obama make her ambassador
yes.
to Ireland?
That's
so
correct.
She's leading the first lady. Then behind her is Hillary Clinton, and then Laura Bush, and former President George Bush is there, Jr., and then Michelle Obama. So Caroline Kennedy runs over and gives Michelle hugs and kisses and just tramps by the other ones. And kind of like said hi to Hillary. And the ushers go to have them seated. You know, they're seated in the front, and they have their chairs with their names on them. And so Michelle, George Bush, Laura Bush, Hillary, Caroline Kennedy all sit down. Well, in comes Rosalynn Carter, Jimmy Carter's
daughter,
President Carter's wife.
Well, yes.
Hillary had to tell Caroline about 3 times to get up so that Mrs. Carter could sit there, because you're kind of like breaking up the first ladies here. I actually posted on Facebook. I said Hillary actually has done the right thing. She literally had to like knock Caroline Kennedy out of the chair because Carolyn wasn't getting it. Hillary was like, you need to get up because I think we all have to be the first ladies here. You're not one.
Right. That's right. Yeah.
So, but let me tell you, hopefully, the tension, if you could cut a knife between the tension of Michelle and George Bush sitting next to each other, and then Laura, and then Hillary. Rosalynn, I don't, no bad vibes, but Hillary, Laura, George, Michelle, oh God, the tension was palpable. It was just, and then Governor Brown is sitting next to Michelle, and he totally turns his back on, so he can't even look at Bush. I would be the best,
wow.
I would be the best, like, gossip columnist, you know, like, who notices all this stuff.
Well, I'm glad they all showed up. I know Hillary has got other things on her mind right now, but I'm certainly glad she made the trip out to, honor this great lady, and it was a good thing that she did that.
Yeah, it was nice to see Patty and Ron speak. There was great strife in that family with those two. Oh my God, I still don't know where those kids went off the rails, but they spoke very highly. And you know what? It's funny. I haven't seen them in person, Boy, I never thought they looked like Nancy and Ron Reagan, but boy, they look like Nancy, and he looks like his dad, and she looks like her mom. You know, as they've gotten older,
yeah,
they look more like, you know, their parents. He spoke, and he really had President Reagan's kind of mannerisms, and you'll have to watch the replay tonight. You'll see what I mean. But Michelle Obama was very chummy with them and hugging and kissing them, and you know, you can just tell that where their chips lie, but it was very nice. I love history. I love politics. You know that. You know, I love political history. And it was just so nice to see Jim Baker and former Prime Minister to Canada. He spoke. I can't think of his name. Mulroney. Is it Mulroney, the Irish?
Brian Mulroney. Uh-huh.
Yes. He spoke beautifully, and he read a love letter from Ron, from President Reagan, you know, to Nancy. And, oh, he just spoke about their times together. And Jim Baker spoke, and the kids spoke, and Diane Sawyer, and Tom Brokaw. This is a funny story. He told the story. I guess he was like a little, you know, news guy in Kansas or North Dakota or some, you know, one of these flyover states. And he gets a phone call from NBC in 1966 in Los Angeles. He's going to get the job, you know, go to LA. We want you to be our political correspondent in LA. And that's like a big deal, right? He gets on the plane, he flies to LA. It's 1966. So he goes into the boss's office and they said, we don't really have much for you to cover. He goes, there's some actor that's like going to run for governor. So why don't you just ride the bus with him? He's not going to go anywhere. And it was Ronald Reagan.
Oh.
it was so funny the way he told it. He's like, I'm this young kid, like, okay, I don't care, you know, it's Hollywood, I'm in LA, and next thing I know I'm on a bus, like, you know, riding through Chatsworth and every town up and down the street with his actors, and all of a sudden, yeah, and he says, well, all of a sudden, Nancy Reagan, she took him in,
yeah.
He said, she got me in under her power, and we were friends ever since. And, you know, she just knew, again, she knew, you know, Ron Reagan, if you remember the days where he would go out and want to say hi to everybody, and he was friendly, and she was always the one holding him back. And, you know, they said that he couldn't fire a maid, but she would come in and fire the maid. Like, you know, and really, when I think about it, I think about that's how women are in a relationship. I'm the driving force of my relationship. I make the decision. I don't know.
Uh-huh. Yeah. If it works, if that's the grease that keeps the engine rolling, then why not? You know, Nancy was a very strong personality, strong-willed person, but you know, she and Ron had some chemistry there. And I was going to say, as we talked earlier about the importance of first ladies, do you remember what Nancy Reagan was remembered for? It was the Just Say No anti-drug campaign.
Mm-hmm.
In 1982. She came out. She came out and talked about that, drugs and alcoholism, and said, just told the kids, just say no. And I think that was the front end of the DARE program, wasn't it, Maureen?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. And
Mr. T was part of that campaign during the 80s, and he was there today. He was there. Tom Selleck was there. Maria Shriver and Arnold were there. It was definitely the who's who of the East Coast and the West Coast. I mean, it was definitely a mix of the Hollywood, just because the Reagans were, you know, the Hollywood and the East Coast. And it was a very dignified, there was 1,000 people there, invite only. Melissa Geller, I don't know, she was on Fox a couple times. She was being interviewed, and she was extremely busy. And, you know, it was just, they said, although that this had been planned for 30 years, they had to pull it off in a couple of days, which is not easy.
Uh-huh.
She died on Sunday.
Right.
And,
yeah.
You know, I mean, you live there. You know what it was like. What was it like? You just don't go on that side of town?
Well, it's a madhouse. And I remember when Ronald Reagan passed away in, what, was it 2006, right? And he, 2004. It was just nuts. 2004, excuse me, in June 2004. it was a madhouse around my place. You couldn't get around for at least a week and a half. It was packed. People came in and paid their respects. It was beautiful that they would do that, but the crowds and the traffic were just unbelievable. And
I'm sure it was much busier than when Nancy. I'm sure it was much busier when Reagan died than today.
Oh, sure.
In the last, but they said that they did have to extend the hours for her viewing. It was very busy. And you know what I thought was really touching, Bob, when the hearse drove her body, the casket, up the hill. You know, it's a long way up the library. All the docents lined that the driveway, that whole hill, all the docents of the library stood and lined on the street as her hearse drove by. I thought that was so touching, you know, because we've some of those docents have recognized us, and because we've been there a few times, and we've done the private meetings with like Gretchen or, you know, I don't know. Things like that to me are just very touching, you know, that people donate their time and stood there and honored the First Lady.
Absolutely.
That's when you know somebody touches their lives, right?
I was doing some research, Maureen, this week to find out, you know, just a couple of the First Ladies who had a huge impact on the world and just on the country and on the world as well, too. You know, you go back to the Depression time, Eleanor Roosevelt. Everybody knows who Eleanor Roosevelt is, but I'm not sure if they really understand the impact that she had on certainly the United States. She helped Franklin Delano Roosevelt when he was sick, helped basically run the country. I would say she was really the first female president that we had who wasn't voted in.
Because she said that she would be his legs, remember? Like she went to places that he could not go.
That's right. I think the last couple of years of his life, I think she helped in a lot of decision making, along with Truman before he took over. So I think it's interesting that that she would have such an impact. But she was a very strong personality, and she oversaw a lot of the programs that went in place. When he was ill, when he was sick and incapacitated. So, you know, she was a big advocate of human rights and civil rights and that sort of stuff. And it was really really impressive.
Yeah, but you know, there was such controversy with that. He died with his mistress. There was always talk about what she, you know, I don't know. Reagan's didn't have any of that around them. Eleanor had a very sad childhood, very, very, I mean, I've researched a lot of Eleanor Roosevelt. I remember doing a book report on their biography, and, you know, I was intrigued with them at, like, fifth grade, and, I mean, for the time, I guess, it was a tough time. I mean, he led the country through a horrible depression and then the World War, and then he died before he even got to see the war end.
That's true.
I don't know. You know, there's. I believe that there's a precedent for every age, and I don't mean like just an age group. I mean for a generation, a decade. Reagan was the '80s, right? We could not think of the '80s without the Reagans. Did you know that Reagan was? Did you know that she was the first lady to bring alcohol back into the White House? Because Carters did not allow it.
Wow.
See, it was so gloomy with the Carters. You know, it was just gloomy.
it wasn't a fun 4 years at all, was it? I mean, and then you know he crushed him on the in the election in 1980 and came back and just and as you said earlier, it brought some color to the country, not just the White House, but also to the rest of the country and the rest of the world. Finally, the United States. Is recognized as the kind and generous country that we were supposed to be, and not just these evil. I think there's a lot of similarities Maureen, I think we talked about it before, between the, what our country was like in the 70s and what, what it's like today. Unfortunately, the negatives certainly stand out, don't they?
Yeah. I'm having a hard time with you. You're breaking up. I don't know if our listeners are hearing you, because sometimes the playback, you don't break up, but for me, you're breaking up, so I can't really hear what you just said.
All right. Well, I was talking about the comparison of our country in the 70s versus what it's like today, and it's very similar. Unfortunately, the negatives certainly pile up today versus what we had in the 70s and how we're viewed.
Yeah, it feels very much like, it does feel very much to me the same, that we're waiting for that switch to flip, you know, and we're going to go back into the brighter, better times. And, you know, again, there's so much against us now versus in 1979, you know. I posted something about the Reagan, that what saddens me about Nancy Reagan dying is this is a chapter that we close. That's the last of that generation. There will be no more of that generation. It was like losing my grandmother again. She was part of that generation, that greatest generation, the generation that gave without asking, went to war without being drafted, just loved this country, worked hard. They were the generation that came up in the 50s, you know, worked, made the most money, had the best retirement. We don't have any of that anymore. You know, it's just so scary.
People coming out of college,
no jobs.
The thing about Ronald Reagan as the president, you felt secure. I always, the one image that I have of him, and he was a towering man, he was tall, he was like everybody's dad. Did you feel that? When he was the president?
He was like my grandpa. I thought of him as my grandfather. Yeah, he was just a comfort.
But for everybody, right? Not just you, but for everybody. He played that role for everybody. And that's going to be missed sorely.
He had humor, and he was an actor. I mean, there was just so much to him. And I really highly recommend getting his book and downloading it. It's him reading his story. It's Reagan in his own voice. And you listen to that and you listen to him reading. And he talks about living through the Depression and having it just be the worst. I mean, difficult. I mean, my grandparents went through the Depression and, you know, he carried that into the White House, that kind of, you know, that kind of character, that kind of struggle. And he had a whole generation behind him that went through the same thing. And in his book, he talks about he had tried to go get a job in Montgomery Ward, and he didn't get the job, and he was devastated. So he moved to Davenport, Iowa, which is the same town where my son went to college, and got this job as a sports announcer. And he says if he had gotten a job at Montgomery Ward, he'd never be president. You know, it's just very, he didn't grow up and say, I'm going to be the president. He fell into it in a way of leading various causes prior to becoming, you know, his governor and then president.
Absolutely. I'm a believer in fate, and things happen for a reason. And obviously that event in his life was an important one for him, and I guess he felt that he had other things to do than work at Montgomery Ward, and it's a good thing.
I'm sure
he would have been a great he'd have been great there, but still, he had better things to do, greater ambitions.
I think back to when we first interviewed Mike and how excited we were, and, you know, having the president, or I called it he was my first son interview, the first time I'd interviewed a first son. And remember some of the things that he said about his dad. He said, my dad was a cheerleader for this country. Because I had mentioned in the book how his dad just talked about feet a shining sea and the when they would fly into California from the East Coast and the panoramic view of the West Coast. And he talks about this in his book, and it's just so beautiful. And Mike said, you know, my dad was a cheerleader for this country. He loved this country. there are things that you can't fake. You know, he loved Nancy, the way they looked at each other, the way she looked at him. If you go back and look at all the stuff they've been playing through the week, you can't pretend that. Those things are natural. You can't pretend to love this country the way he did. When they laid her casket out today, they sang "America the Beautiful," and when they did the procession this morning, they sang the Battle Hymn of the Republic because that was his favorite song. And you know, just was so touching. And I said to Mike Reagan, I said, you know, let's talk about your dad and Nancy. I said that was a love like no other, and he said, yes, she loved him to a fault. Uh-huh. And by that, he meant, and both kids talked about it today, they had a circle around them, and they didn't let even the children in. They were so into one another that that was what I think he meant when he said he loved her to a fault, you know, she loved him to a fault.
Uh-huh.
I think it's
beautiful, and that's just what it's all about, you know. I was gonna say that on one of our trips, Maureen, to the Reagan Library, it was just beautiful seeing you had paid your respects to Ronald Reagan, and I'm sure next time you come down to the library, we'll do the same for him and for Nancy as well too, and.
I thought about that. You know, I thought about that today when I posted that picture the other day of me kneeling and praying in front of Reagan gravesite. That my gosh, next time they'll both be there. You know.
Yeah. And you referenced that one video or picture of Nancy Reagan draped over President Reagan's casket, and she's together again, and I think, you know, and it's unfortunately it's in death, but and sad, but together again for them. So
that's what both of her kids said. They were very, 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 it was really, I was so happy to see those kids really come together for their mom. And they both just said there's no place that she wants to be, you know, that she's going to be buried within inches of his casket. They're going to be inches apart.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And they said that's where she's always wanted to be. And she was ready to go. And she had not been well. And
wow.
Patty had said that the last time Patty had seen her, she laughed and they laughed about Dad and remembered something. And then Patty said, I didn't know that would be the last time I'd hear her laugh because she died.
Wow.
So,
wow.
Yeah. I think you'll enjoy going back and catching some of it, Bob. I think you'll really be. The speeches were just phenomenal. Tom Brokaw and all of that. You know, it was a memory. It was our memories. We lived through that. We could remember a lot of what they had talked about. You know,
we could say that. The Carter years were probably a failed presidency. You know, he's getting up there in age. So is George H.W. Bush.
Survive.
So, didn't he have brain cancer?
Yeah.
Brain tumor.
He's going to be, he's in his 90s, isn't he? Jimmy Carter?
Is he in his 90s? Like 88 or 89 or something like that?
No. Is he 90? He's older than George Bush Sr.
Oh, George H.W. Bush is like 80 or 89 or something like that.
No, he's 92. He's my grandma's age.
Is he really? Is he really?
Yeah,
I have these things locked in my head, Bob.
Oh,
my
goodness.
Holy cow.
George Sr. is the same age as my grandmother, born in 1924.
Oh, so, oh wow.
But yeah, no, and Jimmy Carter's older than that. So, but Rosalind looks very good. You know, she's frail, but she looked good. Rosalind looked good.
Yeah.
And Hillary looked dignified. And Laura looked beautiful. I think she was wearing Barbara Bush's pearls, a strand of those big pearls. And Michelle looked very nice in a black, you know, nice black dress. She was you know, they just had the big wing-ding last night with the Canadians, so she must have had a rough flight out west in the middle of the night, I'm sure. But she looked nice and dignified. You know, she had a very nice dress on, and everybody there was, you know, looked nice. And it was just Ron said a very funny thing, though, Ron Jr. He said, don't be surprised if there's a little ghost running around the halls of this library wearing a Chanel suit, just fixing things, you know, just making sure. My mother, he said, my mother would never, my mother could never rest. Everything had to be just, wait, let me just fix it. So I had to laugh at that because, you know, I come from a Nancy Reagan. My mother even looks like Nancy Reagan. I grew up with a Nancy Reagan as my mother. Everything was perfect. Everything is perfect. And I totally, but I didn't go off the rails like his kid. I kind of stayed with, I liked the way my mom did everything. I do the same thing. But, you know, it was, that was also a generation. You know, let's be fair. It was a different generation of women that ran a house. And, you know, back then it was your home and your children were your job. And they better turn out because you didn't do your job.
That's right. That's right. Say, Maureen, I wanted to, I just wanted to give a quick shout out. We've just got a couple more minutes left on the show here. But I wanted to give a quick shout out to thank Mike Causey, who had me as a guest on his radio program for Federal News Radio in D.C. Earlier this week.
And I saw
that. Give him a quick shout out. Yeah, that was a good little talk this week, talking about investments and how the market is, or the investing world today is not the same as it used to be, but buy and hold has turned into hope and pray. And Mike gave us a little bit of time, and we were able to talk about our show a little bit as well, too. So I want to give him a quick thank you, quick shout-out. Thank you.
Thank you. That was nice. And also, let's give a shout-out to our friend Kimberly. It's her birthday. She was a guest on our show. She's a friend of ours, Kimberly Blaine. Happy birthday.
Oh, Kimberly's wonderful, and she's been on our she's been on our show once, and she's just so, she's brilliant. She's smart as a whip, and
I love following her. Love it.
Love Kim. Kimberly and I went to high school together, and she's stunningly beautiful, and she was back in high school, and she just got better with age. It's one of those amazing evolutions and transformations that you just get better with age, just like yourself, just like you.
Yeah. Well, I'm going downhill quick.
This house is killing me.
I don't know why I thought I wanted a big house.
So next week, Maureen, I'm off. I'm on the road again. You know, it seems like every other week I'm on the road, right? I'll be in New York City next week with my parents. I'm taking them to New York Wednesday, and we'll be back on Sunday. And we're going to go see a taping of Fast Money. We're unfortunately not going to go see Jim Cramer and Mad Money, but I'll see him on probably on Thursday.
You'll see a little bit of work
in the morning.
You'll go see Guy Adami on Passport. Yeah, good job. Say hi to them.
And then I'm gonna take my dad to the floor of the New York Stock Exchange, Maureen. He hasn't been there in probably about 50 years, 1963 or something like that. So it's been 50 years since he was there. So I'm gonna take him onto the floor of the exchange. So that'll be a big thrill for him.
It's their wedding. It's their wedding anniversary, right? How many years have they been married?
53 years, Maureen, on March 7th, 53 years and counting, so it's pretty amazing.
So they're another Ron and Nancy Reagan. See, there is longevity. There is true love. There is longevity out there. We have to celebrate your parents. That's wonderful.
You know, Maureen, they say that Romeo and Juliet is a beautiful love story. Forget that. My parents have been married for 53 years. That's a love story.
How long did they date before they were married?
Not very long, Maureen. I think maybe a year, year and a half or something like
that. Yeah, back then they didn't date very long,
Right. My mom was young when they got married. I think she was 20, and she was 21 when my brother was born. So, they got married young.
Well, congratulations. They're both on my Facebook page. I love following them. They're darling as ever, and we are just about out of time. So thanks for spending the hour with me, Bob, and honoring our generation's best president and first lady.
Absolutely. Well, God bless God bless Nancy Reagan and the rest of and the other first ladies and Ronald Reagan, of course. And I'm looking forward to seeing you, and we'll take a tour of the library again when you come back down.
Yes, definitely. We'll get Mike Reagan on again and talk to him. So thanks for joining us on California Connection. We'll see you next week at 4 o'clock on Friday. Bye, Bob.
Bye-bye, Maureen. Thanks, everybody. Take care.
Bye.